Radio.
How to support and help those in need. A talk by Paul O'Callaghan at the One in Christ event at St. John the Beloved Melkite Church, Greenacre.
Your graces, reverend fathers, distinguished guests, and youth of Sydney. It's wonderful to be here today, and congratulations on this third special event that you've organised. I'm really impressed by the way you've come together to do this and also by the marvellous music we've just had. Now, since you're young and fresh in your minds, I have a question. Who can figure out the person that would have said the following thing, which is relevant to why we're here today? So whoever can figure out who this is, just call out when you think you know who it is, all right? So, with trust in the power of the gospel, we can make a real contribution to changing things, or at least to making them better. We can uphold the dignity of all those who await a sign of our love. Together we can protect... Any guesses? No guesses? Okay, I'll keep going. We can protect and build up our common home. I encourage you always to have prophetic courage in rejecting everything that demeans human beings and all forms of exploitation that degrade them. Continue to show those signs of hospitality and solidarity, great and small, which can light up the lives of children, of old people, of migrants, of refugees in search of peace. Indeed, be peace. Yes, got it. Unfortunately, there's no prize, but there you go. I'll just read one little bit more because I think it really speaks to what we're here for today. Be peacemakers and reconcilers between peoples, communities, and believers. Unleash all of your energies, all of your commitment to work in cooperation with the other faith communities that, like yourselves, make the dignity of the person their primary concern. That's, I think, a pretty good message. That's what Pope Francis told the leadership of the Caritas organisation in Rome just 3 months ago. He was urging them particularly to think about the situation for refugees and asylum seekers. So Bishop Robert has given us a very inspiring set of thoughts today, inspiring and in some ways provocative, certainly provoking us to really think about what we can do. Because one of the things that lay people do is not, we don't preach, but we can do things in the world. We have the capacity to act in the world. Bishop Robert gave three examples of people who chose to act at the local level in their immediate sphere of influence. And they don't have to be Bill Gates. They don't have to be, famous people. And all of us, I think, in our lives know quite remarkable people who've opened their doors to others, whether they be homeless or with mental health issues or in different ways. I know I was fortunate to grow up in a family where that was the case, and I guess it really is one of the reasons I ended up coming into this area of work. But one of the interesting things too is that in addition to the actions that you can take, and I'm thinking here of young people, actions that you can take in your own sphere of influence, there is also the capacity to influence those such as our elected representatives, like Tony Burke, who was just here with us a little while ago. Tony has a whole long history of commitment to social justice and is a very caring, compassionate person. Unfortunately, he's in the midst of a very toxic environment, frankly, in national politics at the moment, particularly given the rise of these very insular views and populist views and selfish views about what Australia should be like. But I mention him because he's not alone. I've been lucky enough in my career to get to know many of our federal parliamentarians, and they are open generally to listen to what you have to say. It might not be what they say publicly on the television, but generally they are open to listen, and you are all constituents in different electorates here in Sydney, and you know, we have of course many friends and colleagues who are constituents right around Australia. And sometimes I'm surprised that people say to me, oh, it's not worth talking to the politicians, they won't listen to us. Well, you'd be very surprised. They do. If you make the point of trying to go and meet them, in general, as long as you're prepared to wait for a few weeks, they will make time to meet you. And typically, if you can articulate your points in a, you know, clear, moderate way, then they will take note of that. One of our, in fact, our very longest serving parliamentarian, who only retired at the last election, a man called Philip Ruddock, who was from an electorate to the north of here, Barara Waters area. I've known him for a long time, and he often says to me, but Paul, nobody in my electorate comes to talk to me about the issues you're talking about on international aid, on human rights. Nobody has actually seen me. And even when his government, against his wishes, but his government made a massive cut in the official aid program 3 years ago, he said he didn't get a single letter, email or phone call from anybody in his electorate about that. Well, I think it's partly because many people feel, oh, I won't have any effect, or they might think, gosh, it's a bit scary going to see a politician. But actually it's not. It's not scary. That's their job. That's what they're there for. They've got an office in the electorate itself, and it's really just a matter of, you know, having the confidence to, and together with a few friends or colleagues, making sure you've got something to say, and perhaps asking them to focus on something or to take a particular action or to speak up in their party room in Canberra when they go to Canberra. These are all important things. What happens in the party room is that one member of parliament will get up and say, as we had actually here, Craig Laundy, for example, who's a member for, I've forgotten what it's called, but it's Reed, it's not far from here. In his first couple of years in parliament, he, when Tony Abbott was the Prime Minister, he decided he would speak up. He told me privately that he realised he would never get elected again, so he had nothing to lose. Actually, he did get elected again, but he didn't think he'd get elected again. So he decided he would speak up in the party room, and he stood up on a number of issues which I think all of us would be very supportive of here. And he said to me that he found there was a resonance. Once people realised he was prepared to speak up, there were people in his electorate, which is a very multicultural electorate, who felt more confident in him. Muslim members of the electorate felt more confident in coming to see him and talking to him. So I suppose one of my main thoughts is, don't think small in a way. Be confident. This democracy has many weaknesses, it's true. But we do still have direct access to our state and federal parliamentarians and to our local councils, and that is something that we need to make sure at least they hear of. Now, turning for a moment to, I suppose, the inspiration, going back to Pope Francis, I just think of a few examples from within our own Caritas network. Caritas, by the way, is a word that means love and compassion in Latin. It's a part of the Catholic Church, a specific ministry of the Catholic Church, which focuses on assisting those in distress, whether it's humanitarian disasters or for long-term support in extreme poverty situations. It does not focus just on Christians. It focuses on those in need. And so a few years ago, I had the privilege of going to Jordan, to the capital city of Jordan, Amman, and I had the opportunity to meet with about 200 Syrian refugee families there, together with our Caritas Jordan colleagues who were assisting them. We have put in some medical clinics and education and training programs over there. These are people who are in a terrible situation in the sense that many of them, well, they can't go back to Syria, and they still can't go back to Syria because of the violence and the war. They can't get a visa to go anywhere else, and they're not allowed to work in Jordan. And yet, almost everyone we met was highly educated, engineers and doctors and lawyers. They got up and they spoke to us. They just shared with us an aspect of their journey and their experience. And we listened to all of that. And then I turned to one of our Caritas Jordan colleagues who was about 23 years old, a young woman, and I just quietly said to her, "So what do you do?" And I was thinking when I asked that question, you know, what part of the job? Do you do the medical support? Do you do the teaching thing? Do you do something else? And she immediately said, without thinking, "We give them hope. That's our job." And it really struck me. Here I am, you know, 3 years later telling you this story, because that is so important in people's lives. It was exactly the same theme when I visited Sri Lanka some years ago and met a community of widows, war widows, mostly in their late 20s and early 30s. You probably know in Sri Lanka there was a civil war running for about 27 years and a lot of people died, a lot of men died. This was a community up in the north in the Tamil area where about 40 women and their children were living in a community. All the men had died. So it's a community we had been supporting for many years through Caritas and through Caritas Sri Lanka. And meeting some of those women, they didn't want to talk so much about the material support that we'd been able to assist them with food and with helping them build a house, small, very small house and so on. They just wanted to say thank you, because until that support, we had given up all hope. That word hope keeps appearing. I think as human beings, we have to have hope. We need to have hope. We need to believe that things can get better. And that's been the case in my experience in other places. After the terrible typhoon in the Philippines 4 years ago, Typhoon Haiyan, which had 8,000 or 9,000 people were killed on the first day and about a million houses were destroyed. I met a woman in a village there, which we were supporting, and she wanted to come and thank me. She was a woman in her early 30s, and she came up to say thank you. And it's one of those very humbling experiences, because she had lost... What had happened is a wave, like a tsunami wave, about 2 metres, 3 metres high, had come over the whole village. And, of course, they didn't know that was going to happen. And that's how most of the people died. So she came up to me to say thank you. And then in the conversation, it turned out she'd lost her parents, her husband, her parents-in-law, some of her siblings. That all died. And here she was striding up to say thank you for basically what the Australian church had done through its parishioners and in the schools to provide support and moral support and through our faith, through our prayers. And for me, that's one of the amazing things, that people in the most extreme circumstances, they're not only resilient, but they're so faith-filled and gracious and grateful. So again, it reminds you that we can make a difference in different ways. Through the Caritas Network, that's one of the ways that we can do something. I guess I just finish by saying that I think we're going to have more challenges over the coming decade as a result of conflict and particularly the effects of climate change than less. We already have in the world 63 million displaced people. Most of them are living in their own countries. There, of those, 5 million are Syrian refugees who've had to get out from the war. But I guess the likelihood is that, and all the signs are, that over the next decade, that number of people in distress who have to escape from where they are, either escape persecution or the physical circumstances, that's going to increase. So as Christians, we can't do everything, but we need to think what we can do. we need to really believe that we can contribute in some ways, we can make a difference. And I think the stories that Bishop Robert gave us about individuals making a difference really do help us remind ourselves that it's not just organisations, it's us as individuals. We can do things individually and in groups. And so I look around at the youth here, and it really gives me great inspiration and confidence, because you are exploring ways in which you can make a difference as Christians in this country at a time when the political landscape is ugly. It's really ugly. You know, I grew up here. It's never been as ugly as this. And I'm hoping over the next decade things will improve quite a bit, and that the quality of leadership in our two major political parties will improve, and that those political parties will come to remember that the values of the country haven't changed. The fundamental values of compassion and care and love thy neighbour, which are there even amongst secular people, they're still there. That's part of it. That's the bulk of Australia, in my view. That's 80% of who we are. That those politicians have to remember that's who their society is. I think they've gone off on a bit of a tangent and they're playing some games. They want to desperate to stay in power and so on. But, you know, as Christians, I think we've got to think big. We've got to be confident. I can see from your faces that you have a lot of confidence. You've got a great long life ahead of you as well. And you can do things. You can make things happen locally and, I think, nationally and internationally. So, all the best. Thank you.
That was Paul O'Callaghan with How to Support and Help Those in Need from the One in Christ event at St. John the Beloved Melkite Church, Greenacre. And for more talks, interviews and shows, visit cradio.org.au.